It is 24 and a half minutes after the hour. That's after 9 o'clock here at the Central Time Zone. And it's a Tuesday, and that means a conversation we look forward to every week with Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and a vintner. That's how he makes his living now. Could you call it that, Don? Making a living?
I couldn't call it making a living,
No.
Well, I could call it, trying to build a business.
Well, let's just say it's his
long-term investment.
It's Don's passion. Don's passion now is making wines. Vela della Pace in Garden Valley. And he does a fine job. He's got some medal winners out there already. And we're not here to talk about wine, though. We're here to talk about climate change / global warming. And Don, just a little bit of history here from my memory. I'm not looking at, I haven't looked this up this morning, but this is the way I recollect it starting off. The United Nations back in the 70s said, we're ruining the planet. And we're pumping all this CO2 in the climate, it's going to warm up. And the polar ice caps will melt, and it'll flood the coasts, and this is terrible. It'll make the Earth uninhabitable. Therefore, all you countries, all you member nations of the UN, we solicit climate models. Computers were still in an early stage of development in the 70s, but nonetheless, they got 31 climate models from various countries around the world that all were tuned to look for global warming. And sure enough, they found it, all except one. Now, of the 31, the Russians had a climate model that was spot on. And as far as I know, it still is today, although now the number of climate models looks to be 36. And they published a chart here that shows all the various models with rising expectations of increases in the global temperature when actual observations, that is scientific measurements of these temperatures, say it's not happening.
That's pretty much an overview. So
well, good. That's what I wanted to do. So they're relying on models. That says this is political.
It is highly political. Has been maybe it started off really being a scientific endeavor to try to understand the climate and the change in climate in our global climate, but it has turned political because the globalists obviously can use this as another means of controlling people and scaring people that we must be doing some things differently than what we have been doing, and we've got to get rid of fossil fuels, so-called fossil fuels. Well, the UN put together this intergovernmental panel on climate change, and it's that to whom you have been referring of all of these mathematical models, trying to model the Earth's temperature and climate change based on various variables, and one of them that they obviously rely heavily on is CO2.
Now, the word model is the same as the word predict, right? It's meant to forecast. That's what a model does.
It's meant to forecast, but when I was doing mathematical modeling of any physical phenomena, when in my physics courses or biochemistry courses or whatever it happened to be, the instructor always warned that you can a mathematical model is great when within the range within the range of data you actually have. So for example, if you're modeling temperature over 100 years or whatever it happens to be, then you can develop a mathematical model that accurately identifies or follows the temperature within that 100 years. You get out of that 100 years, now you're in a different space. And the old adage was, you can define a whole elephant, just from its tail, but you don't know where the tail, where you're going after that. And that's the kind of the case with all of these models, because they don't have either. They're emphasizing one of their parameters too much, or not emphasizing something else. And so it's very, very, and we all know, climate is very complicated. I mean, if you can't, we have pretty much, supercomputers to forecast the weather. And how often is weather forecasting accurate?
Well, in any given place, not very often.
50-50.
Yeah.
At best.
Yeah, usually, at best, 50, 50-50. And 50. That, you're only forecasting maybe a week, maybe 10 days.
Oh, not even.
And yet, you're trying to do all of this vector analysis on these complicated, systems. And the best you can do is say, well, we've got a 30% probability of rain around 3 o'clock today. And then comes 3 o'clock and doesn't rain.
See, I don't even know what that means, because we have to define terms too. What does a 50% probability of rain mean for you? Does it mean it rains over 50% of a certain area, or 50% of the time, or if you stand 50%. In one place? Yeah, what does it mean?
It's over. Well, obviously, it's over a certain area that they're predicting this, but it means that we think that it may rain, but there's a 50% chance that it will rain.
That's
there's
a pretty wishy-washy statement, if you ask me. Yeah.
One of the things that I've found interesting lately, and maybe they've been doing this for years, but weather forecasters in this neck of the woods have been presenting two or three or four different models or different predictions. And they'll go through, they'll actually predict what each model is suggesting that will happen in the future. And they're radically different. I mean, they're usually extremely different. I saw one guy tell me, I've forgotten his name, the guy in Channel 4, CCO. And he said, there are 13 actual acceptable computer predictions for what's going to happen today. And they're all different.
Yeah. Well, and it's because of the complexity of the problem that they're trying to do. Right. Now project that onto the entire globe and project that into 10s, 20, 50, 100 years out, and how accurate do you think you're going to get? This is only one projection, which is temperature. So, these models, you can model all day, but it's too many variables to consider. Now, the whole point in all of this is that man's activities has a significant impact on our climate. So the question is that correct or is it not? The past would say man's activities doesn't really have that much effect on the climate. Really, okay, you can make a city black by burning too much coal. We know that Europe and England, there was soot all over the buildings and all over the towns, and it wasn't good to be breathing that in. And so we've learned that, okay, we got to clean up our smokestacks, and we've done a very nice job of doing that. But yet they still want to get rid of coal and coal-fired plants, and they want to get rid of fossil fuels because it causes, burning fossil fuels, you're obviously going to be increasing the carbon dioxide concentration in the air. Now, what they don't tell you is that temperatures were rising before the Industrial Revolution, before all of this burning of coal happened. So that tells you that temperature is independent, independent of CO2 and not dependent on CO2. And CO2 isn't man's burning of CO of carbon, for example, isn't an issue with the temperature rising or falling. And so you've got to look at someplace else besides burning of fossil fuels to get you in the right ballpark for what's causing the temperature changes.
See, now that leads me to another question here, and this has been coming to the top in what you've been saying. Over what period of time do we have valid data to predict? Because it seems to me if you're predicting the future, it's got to be based on the past. And at what point did we have accurate global temperature readings written down and conveyed to other people? I mean, how far back in time can we go and get reliable weather data? Would you guess? Give me a century.
Oh, yes. Well, that's a very good question. I mean, people, you know, have been taking temperature readings for a long time. Now, the local temperature readings, I'm sure we could go back quite a ways. And depending on the society, for example, Europe probably was taking temperatures back in the early, you know, certainly by 1800s, but probably even further back than that.
Okay, but if there are 10,000 year cycles of weather patterns, how would we detect them with that shortage of data? I mean, that's really compared to the full length of history, that's almost no time at all.
Well, it's yes, exactly. And so where do we, then you have to kind of guesstimate what the temperature is based on such things as, well, tree rings, for example. Tree rings are going to get you back a little bit further. And when, you know, you've got a fat tree ring, you know that, oh, there must have been a lot of sun or, you know, that year for that tree to grow that much in that year. Or maybe there was a lot of CO2 then. And the other thing that they use, of course, is ice cores. And they try to correlate the lines or the bands and the ice cores towards temperature. But even that model has been brought into question because of you have to make all kinds of assumptions as to what caused those bands in the first place in order for you to be able to accurately say, oh, look, you know, this is the temperature was so and so then, and it was, you know, we had so much snow at that point, and this year we didn't have that much snow. So there, you know, those type of correlations are done in order to get a little bit of a picture of what happened in the past. But when you do, even when you do those type of things, you what you wind up seeing is that the temperature rises and the temperature falls, and the temperature rises and the temperature falls. And it appears that there is a cyclical nature to global temperatures. As opposed to, oh my goodness, the temperature is rising, so we got to do something, you know, type of thing, because the temperature rises and the temperature falls. I mean, it's we're happen to be in a little bit of a cycle where the temperature is rising, but it's not rising unusually high like it has in the past, which is the other thing. So, you know, what is all this, you know, hullabaloo about, oh, we got to do something about our climate. And so you're left with the assumption that these people who are screaming. Now, note that this is part of the UN. This is one of their many councils or organizations within the UN in order to, you know, kind of bring the world together in one united global government.
Yeah, just to give it a name, it's the IPCC, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, which predetermines its purpose. It's there to predict or reveal or to focus on climate change. Because why? Well, according to the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, quote, "The climate time bomb is ticking."
Well, you see, even that title is, you know, to get you excited and saying, oh my gosh, we got to do something about it. But, you know, as we've been saying, you know, man's activities, how much of man's activities really contribute versus something like we know what happens, like the Earth's orbit around the sun and sunspot activities, the greater, the more we know, for fact, that you have more solar irradiance when there's greater solar activity and more sunspots on the sun. That is, you know, the sun is more active and having more little explosions or even big explosions, and so we get more sun. And if you get more sun, guess what's going to happen to the temperature over a period of time? It's going to increase. So we should be looking at, I mean, I don't know if we need to really look at this because it. Okay, you can collect the data, but to try to come up with a model, you've got to include every possible thing that could change, you know, the temperature. And so a lot of these things are not controlled by man. Most of them aren't. I mean, can we control the sunspots? Nah, I don't think so, you know.
No.
Can we control volcanic activity? Probably not. But if you have more volcanic activity, you could have a colder climate because you're, spewing dust and everything up into the upper atmosphere, which could then block the sun. And then, for a period of time, you could have cooler temperatures, which, by the way, is the creationist model for the ice age after the flood, when the Earth was breaking up and you had all kinds of volcanic activity after that. And then you had warm water because the temperatures were moderate before the flood, and so having warm oceans, for example, pumping water into the atmosphere, then blocking the sun, you know, for an extended period of time, led to a lot of snow and what we call the ice age, or even subsequent cycles of aging, ice aging, as little ice ages following the volcanic activity. And so if you can't predict volcanic activity, and if you can't accurately predict the sunspots, and we have some models for sunspot activity, and accurately predict, and we can, you know, predict our orbit around the sun, to a certain, you know, to pretty accurately. The problem with all of that, even if you could predict it with 100% accuracy, it doesn't get you to the political conclusion that man must change his activity, mm-hmm. which is where all of this wants to go. And so we can't do that. So we've got to say, well, you know, what is man doing? Well, he's burning fossil fuels. Fossil fuels, we know, produces CO2. And so we're going to blame everything on CO2 or nitric oxide or, nitrates in the atmosphere or sulfates in the atmosphere. I mean, you probably remember when we had this scare that, oh, my goodness, you know, burning these fossil fuels and diesel oil with all the sulfur in it, we were producing sulfuric acid in the atmosphere, and then we would have acid rain. And everybody on the East Coast was going to die from acid rain. Well, I think there's still people living on the East Coast and on the eastern part of the United States. So that didn't happen. Now, we did clean up our diesel fuel. So we have the lowest amount of sulfur in our diesel fuel, because of it, which was a good thing. And, you know, the Lord commands us to be good stewards of the earth. And part of that is, okay, we're going to make mistakes, and but we can learn from our mistakes, and then we do something about it. I mean, you know, today, to stop for example, in by 2030, or I don't know if it's 2030 or 2035, that Governor Newsom says we're not going to have a gas-powered engine in the state of California is absolutely absurd.
Wow.
And it, for the legislature to even go through with this, they must be crazy as well. I mean, what are these people thinking?
Well, they're
we're just going to turn this off?
They're ideologues. They're driven by ideology, not facts. And that quirk in behavior is brought up at the end of this article. By the way, there's a link to this Cornwall Alliance article in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. It has to do with temperatures in the Corn Belt across the 12 states in the center of the United States, and it shows how hot it's supposed to get according to all those models as measured against something called an area average temperature trend from 73 to 2022, and that's a little blue bar at the left. And what the graph says is the models all predicted rapidly rising temperatures. The blue bar says what really happened, which is almost nothing, almost no change. And the telling paragraph is this: this kind of sanity check is needed because efforts to change U.S. energy policy are based upon climate model predictions, which are often wildly out of line with observed history. This is why environmentalists emphasize models, which can show dramatic change, over actual observations, which are usually unremarkable.
Yes, they are unremarkable. So the moral of that story is, let's keep measuring the temperature and let's follow this, but let's not jump into any heroic efforts to say that everybody must drive electric vehicles. But even electric vehicles, you generate carbon dioxide even driving an electric vehicle, because you've got to mine these precious metals that are in the batteries until, you know, we've got better battery technology. Not only are you destroying the earth in the massive strip mining that must take place, but you're using all kinds of energy to dig up this stuff, and it's these big earth moving equipment, of course, are powered by diesel fuel, so that it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so the bottom line is that God promises in his word that he was not going to send a flood, and not again after, of course, the global flood in Noah's time that, you know, befell the earth, and that by essentially saying that, he's saying, you know what, earth is going to be stable from now on, and so let's not jump to the conclusion that the earth is going to be unstable or is highly sensitive to various things, but that the earth actually can heal itself from many of the injuries that man imposes upon it.
And for Pete's sakes, compare what the models say with actual, real, on-the-ground numbers. Data. That is the real science, which is there if they just look at it and stop politicizing the models. Dr. Don, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com, and you'll find a reservoir. Gee, that's kind of an environmental term, isn't it? A reservoir of information, scientific information that explains and supports the biblical story of creation. You'll find it an excellent website. There's free stuff. You can. I'm not even sure. Can you buy stuff on the Creation Moment site, Don?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we have many books and things for many resources that people can get on various topics.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, Don, thank you very much for what you brought us today. We learned something together, and that's always what we look forward to on Tuesday mornings. It's been 12 years next month since we started.
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness.
12?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And Don,
I don't feel 12 years older.
Well, you don't look a day older. David is starting to wear a little though.
I'm gonna have to ask for a raise. 12 years.
Yeah, exactly. It's time.
Yeah, he's our senior news ruminator. Yeah.
For everybody.
Don, have a great week. We'll see you in 7 days or thereabouts. Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye. Very good. See you, folks.